Welcome to the Versus History Podcast with your hosts, Patrick O'Shaughnessy, Connell Smith, and Elliot Watson.
Hello, folks. Welcome to another episode of the Versus History Podcast. It's me, your host, Patrick, on behalf of the editorial team, Connell and Elliot. And today we are joined by author Eva Taylor, who is the daughter of Sabinza and Peter Tazelaar, who was a major Dutch war hero. Eva was born in Utrecht, but has lived in Cheshire, in the north of England, since she was 18. And she is the author of a brand new book entitled Sabine's War. Eva, how are you today? And thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
The pleasure really is all ours. Now, you're the expert in the book because you've written it. Could you tell us all about you and your background before telling us a little about your book, just to set the scene? So you, your background, and then all about your book, please.
I came to England when I was 18 after I left school as an au pair. And I very soon met my husband to be. So although I went away for a year to France after that, I came back to England the following year and we got married a long time ago now, 1969. And we had three children and I now have five grandchildren. Unfortunately, my husband died a few years ago. But I am still in England because obviously my family is in England now. And although I go to Holland quite a lot still, my brother is still there and I have some nephews and nieces. And that is where I found the boxes with all the information that I have written the book about.
Fantastic. And what is the book all about, Eva?
The book is really the collection, the archives that I found in my mother's belongings after she died. And the archive consists of letters that she has written to her mother, smuggled out of jail, to friends, letters that friends have written to her, and some of the reports that she wrote for the Red Cross after the war. It is also a lot of research that I've done into what happened to her during the war, because, of course, while she was in the camp, she couldn't communicate to anybody. And so I don't really know exactly what happened in the camps other than what I've read in other people's books, where she is quite often mentioned, actually, strangely enough. So, and then there is, of course, the collection of the German letters that the German guard wrote to her in Mauthausen concentration camp. So there is a lot of archive material in there.
Thank you, Eva. Okay, the next question then. So I think you've touched on this already, but how and to what extent is your book, Sabine's War, informed by actual events in history? Or is it a book largely of fiction? Or is it a little bit of both?
No, it is all fact. I have based the book on all her letters that I found and that take us through her whole time during the war. And also about research of things that literally really happened during the war. So it is a totally factual book. There's no fiction in it at all.
Okay then, so when Germany invaded Holland in May 1940, Sabine joined the resistance movement when she was aged just 22. So when taking that decision, what pros and cons would Sabine have had to weigh up when considering joining? Because it was a huge decision, an understandable one, but a monumental one. So what factors may have been weighing on her mind, or what would she have had to consider when making and taking that critical decision?
I think, to be very honest, that she didn't think about the pros and cons. Everybody in Holland was extremely upset that the country was being invaded and very determined that they would see the Germans off as soon as possible. Most of her friends became part of the underground movement as well, and they persuaded her, or I'm sure she certainly thought of it herself as well, that she should be part of this underground movement and make sure that her country would be free again very soon. And it was certainly in the beginning of the war, the thought that the war would be very short and that it would be over in a few months. And of course, this did not happen at all, but that was what they all thought. And they all joined to make that happen as soon as possible. Sadly, she lost a lot of her friends in the process. A lot of her friends went over to England, like my father, who at that stage she didn't know yet. So it was quite a different scenario than they had envisaged. But it was really not whether it was a good thing or a bad thing. It was just a thing that you did for your country.
Yes, completely understood. Okay, then helping to hide those avoiding the German authorities. Sabine was soon betrayed and subjected to repeated violent interrogations. Many of her friends were executed, but Sabine was instead sent to the Mauthausen concentration camp via the Amersfoort and Ravensbrück camps. What could you tell us about Sabine's experience at that time? Horrific, I guess.
In Amsterdam, she was in the jail and she was there to be interrogated. So every day they took her from the jail to an interrogation center. And yes, she was beaten repeatedly. What she was really worrying about and very frightened of was being tortured. And she was very lucky that they didn't do that. I think in those days, perhaps women prisoners were slightly better treated than male prisoners. And although the beatings were obviously awful, she didn't get really the full treatment that some other people did. But it was a harsh regime, nevertheless. The food was very bad. She was in a very cramped cell, a one-person cell with six other women. And her mother was allowed to pick up and bring her laundry every week to her in person. And Sabine found a way of smuggling secret letters to her mother, because obviously her mother was very worried about her, but knew not what was happening. So Sabine was able to scribble these letters on bits of cigarette paper and put them in the pleats of her skirt. And her mother, in return, also wrote little letters and put them in the pleats of the skirt. And so they had quite a correspondence going. I have the correspondence of the letters that Sabine sent to her mother, but I obviously don't have her mother's letters to her, because she had to destroy those as soon as she received them. But it was quite an eye-opener how much the women, the prisoners in this prison, knew about what was happening in the war. And the amazing thing is that Sabine is so upbeat about it and all the time reassures her mother that the war will be over very soon. She'll be back home in September, in October. She'll be back home for Christmas. And of course, that doesn't happen at all. But that is what she is thinking while she's in Amsterdam jail. When she's sent to Utrecht jail, she is sent there for sentencing. And her sentencing was as a Nacht- und Nebel-prisoner. That means a night and fog prisoner, and basically means that you disappear from the face of the earth. Nobody is allowed to to know whether you are alive or dead, and you are not allowed any contact with the outside world. So if you die, nobody will know that you've died. And that, of course, is a terrible thing for the family that's left behind, but also for her, because she cannot contact anybody anymore. When she's been in Utrecht for a few weeks, which was not too bad experience, because the German commander there was actually quite nice to the women, as far as he could be, she was sent to Amersfoort concentration camp, which was a male camp. And she was sent there as the only woman. And nobody knew, including the commandant of the camp there, why she was sent there. So all he could do was put her in the prison bunker, the punishment bunker, because of course she couldn't be in the barracks with all the men. There were several thousand men there. And she knew, of course, quite a few of them from the underground movement, and also some of them were friends from before the war. So the men were very, very worried about her, because they thought the commandant is fed up with having a woman there. He doesn't know what to do with her. He'll probably execute her. But she was only there for about 3 weeks, luckily, when she was sent on to Ravensbrück concentration camp. She thought at that time she would go to a camp in Holland and that her mother perhaps might be able to visit her there. But of course, sent to Ravensbrück, that she probably hadn't heard of at that point, was quite a shock. And she arrived there in November 1943. So she'd been in the prisons for a good 6 months by then.
Thank you, Eva. What was the biggest challenge that you faced when you were writing this book?
It was very difficult to stitch it all together because I didn't really want to put any suppositions in of how she felt or what she was doing or not doing. I just wanted to be a truly factual story because I had so many documentation. So I did have to do some research on Ravensbrück because she wrote virtually nothing about that apart from a little bit in her Red Cross reports after the war. But quite a few other people wrote books about their time in Ravensbrück, and they were there at the same time as she was. So she was mentioned sometimes in their books, and it meant that I got some idea of what she was actually doing there and what happened to her while she was there. I found it, doing the research about the camp, I found it very difficult to know what to write because the conditions were so horrific that I felt if I wrote the truth, nobody would read the book. I think it would just be too horrible. So I had to tone it down, if you like, and write more generally about the camp. But I think on her, it left an indelible impression that she really never got over after the war. And I found it difficult to leave it out, but I also knew I just couldn't put it in either. So that was very difficult.
Completely understood. Okay, authors who access primary source documents, as you have done, face some tough choices about what to focus on and by definition, therefore, what to leave out. So what was the most difficult part for you even not to include in your book?
Well, the most difficult part was not to write the most horrific things that happened in the camp, because at that time, nobody in Holland, or in fact, nobody outside Germany, and even perhaps in Germany, knew what was going on in the camp. And so certainly after the war, when she came back and all the prisoners came back from the camps, the people in Holland were not very sympathetic because they said, well, we've had a bad war. We've had a lot of hunger here. We don't hear any more stories about camps. And of course, they had no idea how horrible these camps actually were and what a terrible effect they had on the people who were there. And I did find that difficult to leave out, but I really decided that I wanted people to read my book and not be put off by these horror stories. So that was quite a difficult decision.
Well, thank you very much indeed, Eva. I really appreciate your time. Thank you for sharing your knowledge of your book with us here on Versus History. We're very, very grateful. On behalf of myself and the editors, thank you so much indeed for your time and coming to talk to us here on Versus History. We wish you all the best and all the best for your publication, Sabine's War.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Versus History podcast. Visit us at www.versushistory.com and follow us at Versus History on Twitter and Instagram. You can download all episodes from iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or from wherever you get your podcasts.